Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
On today's podcast, Adam Richard returns for our Mission Impossible series as we tackle Mission Impossible 3. My name is Justin Hamilton, and I need to get my hands on my rabbit foot for Big Squid. Hello, welcome to today's Mission Impossible episode. Mission Impossible, I should say. My favourite pun of the year. And I don't know, sometimes you just really have to entertain yourself, don't you? The fabulous Adam Richard returns, and this is once again a fun podcast. We're loving going back over these movies, and I hope you're enjoying them too. And we're doing this to gear up for the new Mission Impossible movie dropping in July, Dead Reckoning Part 1. Have you seen the trailer? It looks great. It looks like so much fun. And look, I don't know if you like behind the scenes stuff, but there is a moment in the trailer where crazy Tom Cruise leaps off a motorbike, leaping off a massive mountainside, and you can find the real stunt online. And the real stunt is Coco Bananas. Go and check it out. It looks like it's going to be so much fun. We love these films and we're really loving going back over them. So I hope you enjoy this podcast. Before we get into it, on June 13th, I'm performing my award-winning stand-up show. Yes, it won an award. My show, Little Victories, at the Harold Park Hotel here in Sydney. And my support act will be Tim Ferguson. Goodness, Tim Ferguson. You know, I started off in a comedy duo called the Bunsa Boys, who you may have heard me talk about in the past, and our first big support was doing it for the Doug Anthony All-Stars, and it just happened to be on my birthday in 1994. So we started at the end of March 94, and we ended up doing support for the Doug Anthony All-Stars at Adelaide University a few months into our career. And I knew Tim and Paul and Richard from when I was about 16, and they had done work for my mum. But anyway, now Tim's doing support for me, and it's great. He booked me for this show. He called me and he said, would you like to come and perform for me at the Harold Park Hotel? And I was like, yeah, you're Tim Ferguson. Of course I would. So it's going to be really a lot of fun. The show starts at 7:30 p.m. and we're keeping tickets super cheap. So it's only $20 for the two of us, and tickets are limited. We're keeping it pretty tight. So if you live in Sydney and you'd like to see the two of us, you can find tickets at my site on bigsquidpod.com. That's bigsquidpod.com. If you go to the site, up in the top right-hand corner, it says gigs. click on that. You'll find all the information, and we'd love to see you there. And for anyone who saw me at the Comedy Store in October last year, the show's changed a little bit. There's some new bits. There's some different parts. So if you would like to see how it's progressed, you know, there'll be bonus material in there for you. Speaking of bonuses, when you sign up to my Patreon, you receive access to bonus podcasts, scripts, competitions, and more. You also have an episode dedicated to you. And today's Patreon supporter is an old pal of mine, Susie Bate. Susie! I've been good friends with Susie, her husband Stu, and daughter Maisie for a long time now. She's been a supporter of mine on and off the stage throughout all of this. She's come to gigs. She's heard me bang on about stuff. And now she's a Patreon supporter, which is very kind. And hopefully, Susie, you're a Mission Impossible fan. I was racking my brain. I was thinking, do you like Tom Cruise? Do you not give a shit about Tom Cruise? Maybe you haven't seen this film, so you and Stu can rewatch it together after you hear this episode. Or maybe you can do it the other way around. Anyway, let me know how you feel about having this movie as part of your shout out. So I hope you enjoy the podcast, and thanks for your support, Suze. And we'll talk soon. If you'd like to have an episode dedicated to you and access to all the bonus podcasts over there, head to patreon.com/Justin Hamilton. That is patreon.com/Justin Hamilton. And you'll find a tier that suits you. Actually, we have a very special two-part Patreon podcast coming up, like in the next week or so. It's a two-part interview from my original podcast, Can You Take This Photo, Please? It's from 10 years ago. Should I tell you who it is? Yeah, of course I'll tell you who it is. I don't know why I'm waiting for some mysterious drum roll that is quite clearly not going to happen. Anyway, it's a two-part interview from 10 years ago with the legend that is Tony Martin, one of my comedy heroes. It's a great interview, and I'm going to be putting that up as soon as I get an opportunity to just clean up the audio bit, because it's like 10 years old, and that will be up on the Patreon. And it's great. I just love Tony so much, and it was great to listen to him talking about stuff from a decade ago. God damn. And there's already interviews up there from Can You Take This Photo, Please? There's interviews from 10 years ago with Ronnie Chang, Tom Gleason, Cal Wilson, Will Anderson. They're all fascinating. So if you'd like to dig into them, please check it out. There's cheap tiers that will help you out with that. And yeah, I found a whole lot of stuff, and I'm wrapped. I'm really wrapped that I can share this stuff again, because it's all gone missing over the years and blah, 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 blah. But anyway, keep an eye and an ear out for that. But now it's time to catch up with retired Impossible Missions Force agent, IMF for short. He was an agent, and now he's a trainer, Ethan Hunt, and he's living a beautiful and relaxed life with his new fiance. But when trouble strikes and an elusive arms dealer begins to wreak havoc in the world, Ethan must return to save the day. Lock and load, baby. It's time for Mission Impossible 3.
Who are you?
You have a wife, girlfriend. Whoever she is, I'm going to find her. And then I'm going to kill you right in front of her.
Our first question is usually, when did you first see this movie? But I kind of, apart from answering that, I want to dig straight into...
Oh, I have an answer for that, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I have an answer as well. But the thing that I wanted to open up is, remember when the mystery box wasn't a bad thing? Like, it was actually quite exciting when Abrams used to talk about it?
Yeah.
Was that a TED talk?
Maybe.
That he originally talked about the mystery box, the box that he'd been given by his grandfather, and the mystery of what was inside was better than... Than what was inside. I don't know if it's his fault that it became a bad thing. I think so many people went, oh, yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
And then if you use the mystery box idea, I think people think you don't have to know what's inside the box, but you need to know, don't you?
Yeah. I mean,
as a writer,
I kind of, I don't know. I think with, like, I mean, the mystery box, it's the MacGuffin. It's the Hitchcock MacGuffin thing. It's not overly necessary. And I do think some writers get so bogged down in explaining what it is that we end up with films like Mission Impossible 2.
Yes.
Which had too much of what was in the box.
Right.
And a lot of, and also the, what was in the box made no sense because, like, why was she wandering around on the cliff? Yeah. what's this disease that makes you walk to a cliff? But so I think you can split the difference, as a director used to say to me in my performance, because sometimes I'd be like, ah, and then I'd be like, and he's like, right, split the difference, Adam. I think you can come out on having the mystery box still be kind of opaque.
Yeah.
But just explain enough.
Well, we saw John Wick Chapter 4 the other day.
Oh, yeah.
And that's kind of pitch perfect, isn't it?
Yeah.
I understand roughly what's going on.
I didn't really care.
Well, but it's enough. You know, like, I don't need to know. If I go to Papua New Guinea and I take one of those gold coins, is it the same currency, or is it, do I get more because I'm in Papua New Guinea? Like, I don't need to know that.
No.
I just, they're the gold coins.
Yeah. The gold coins mean you get treated well and there'll be guns for you in a special room downstairs.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
Well, I vividly remember enjoying the Abrams early mystery box vibe. And I saw this movie at home because I needed nudging, because I'd heard the second movie was so awful.
Well, it was actually awful, as we discovered.
Yes, we did discover. And I was also not in my enjoy Tom Cruise phase.
And no one was.
Yeah.
I think you were in the zeitgeist in not enjoying Tom Cruise. Like, this was very much a... Yeah, no, Tom, no thanks.
Yeah, I've got a whole bunch of stuff in the squid bits for that explains that whole area. Where did you first see it?
I first saw it at a preview.
Radio Days.
Radio Days, because I did an interview with Michelle Monaghan.
Oh, great.
For this film.
Yes.
So I went along, and I was, at the time, a huge fan of Alias.
Yes.
So was loving Alias, was loving J.J. Abrams, was into the whole thing. I was excited about this for a whole bunch of reasons. Mainly, I love a spy movie, as I've said. I enjoyed the first Mission Impossible and I was hoping for a rehabilitation.
Yep.
Despite the whole Tom Cruise of it all at the time. It did not let me down. And then I had a delightful discussion with Michelle Monaghan, who's married to an Australian and totally gets the Aussie sense of humour.
Great.
And you're just like, oh, you're even better in real life than you are on screen. And you're amazing on screen.
Wow. I do think she's pretty shiny.
Yeah. She's a delight.
Is she?
And this was a phone call.
Yeah, right.
Like, not even a face-to-face. Like, this is a phone call. Just me and Michelle Monaghan just having, you know, shooting shit and having fun.
Having a gas bag.
Yeah, delightful.
I have some thoughts on her coming up. That's... How many people in the cinema? Was it just like about half a dozen?
It was really... Right. I think it was that cupboard in... Yeah.
Paramount?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Down the... Like, because it used to be...
West,
like,
Melbourne?
Yeah, it was like two different distributors used to work out of there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So cute.
Yeah, I saw a lot of good movies in that little cinema.
I remember seeing I was alone watching Mean Girls because I was doing an interview with Tina Fey.
Right.
And slapping my thigh and turning to the person next to me to go, how funny is it I am alone?
You're alone. How'd the interview with Tina Fey go?
She also was wonderful.
Great.
Like, just glorious.
Knows how to... bring her A game to an interview.
But I was like completely off topic, but I was really interested in how do you turn, because this was a non-fiction book that she based this on. I was like, how do you find a narrative in that? Like, how do you thread that needle? Or was it just an excuse? It was just a property to use. But she was really, erudite on that, which was great.
Yeah, great.
I think she liked talking about the process as opposed to, everyone else is just like, just sling me some gags.
Yeah. I just want to be able to tell that amusing story that happened on set that I've told everybody.
Yeah. Because it's like when you get 10 minutes or whatever it is. And in radio, I know I'm only going to use like barely 90 seconds of audio.
Yeah.
So as long as early in the interview I get something juicy like that, one of those stories.
Yes.
I'm like, well, the next 9 minutes is for me.
Yeah, great, great. Yeah, get the story out the way and then find out what you really want to find out. Then I'm
going to ask some actual questions of Tina Fey that I really want answers to.
No, I respect that. That's a very smart way to approach all of this. Anyone getting into radio, make sure you get the boring question out the way and then talk about what you really want to talk about.
I did a 10-minute interview with Brad Bird where I just was like digging into what it was like working on The Simpsons.
Oh, yeah, great.
And, you know, some fascinating stuff like... Which I'm sure no one wanted to ask him.
Yeah, but I bet he was up for chatting.
Yeah, about. He was mad for it.
Our segment, Stamp That Passport, locations we have visited. China?
Yes.
You've been to Shanghai, haven't you?
I have been to Shanghai. It's spectacular. It is terrifying.
Yeah.
Like cars go all over the place, but they all know how each other drives, so it's fine.
It's fine, right?
Like it's like, oh yeah, no, they accepted they're going to drive across four lanes to get there. Like,
right?
It's just, and everyone honks.
Yeah.
You know the really scary thing is all the electric bikes, all the electric the electric scooters.
Yeah.
So you'll just hear and you're like, whoa, it's someone up my ass. Where did they come from?
Right, right.
I know. You can't hear the engine. Like there's no putt putt putt.
I'm getting very close to stop walking around Surrey Hills with my noise-cancelling headphones on listening to podcasts.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
It is terrifying. Where does Hong Kong stand now?
It's
part of China?
Yeah, it's just down the road.
It's officially a part of China.
Yeah, I mean, they still have their own democracy, allegedly.
Yes.
But yeah, I went to Shanghai and Hong Kong within a week of each other. It was great.
Yeah. I've been to Hong Kong, performed at the Hong Kong Fringe.
Oh, fun.
Which was fun. Germany, have you been to Berlin?
I have not been to Berlin.
I have been to Berlin. I thought it was pretty wonderful, actually. Was there for a few days.
I've always wanted to go. It looks like the people who live there look very interesting. I mean, in the movies that I watch.
Oh,
The nature documentaries.
Right. have you been to Italy? Rome?
No, I'd love to go to Italy. The Vatican City looks berserk.
Yeah. So I've been to Vatican City and Rome, but I was a kid. So I've been keen to go back as a grown up. And then US, California, we have been to.
Yeah, we've both been
there. Virginia and Maryland, I'm guessing we have both not been to.
No, I haven't been there. And the Florida Keys, is that?
Florida Keys, never been there.
No.
Segment, The Year in Action. These are the other movies.
I love finding this out. This is my favourite bit.
it's fascinating, isn't it, right? So, Crank.
Oh.
Crank came out. Christopher Nolan's favourite Fast and Furious movie, Tokyo Drift.
I really enjoyed Tokyo Drift.
Right.
Like, I really enjoyed it.
It's his favourite.
Yeah, it's great. Because it's set in Japan where the streets are, you know... winding and narrow.
Yeah.
It's called Tokyo Drift for a reason because all the driving is drifting, which is, I've discovered playing video games, very difficult to do.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But also you kind of go, well, it's a natural progression for Fast and Furious because they're driving these very small Japanese cars.
Right.
That have been hotted up. So why not go to where they make them?
Right.
Or where they're designed.
And does that have like barely any of the original cast in it?
Yeah, there's just one guy.
Right.
Who is in the other bits of the franchise. But it's mainly this kid, this American kid who's in school in Japan. Because Too Fast, Too Furious was too silly.
Yeah.
And had no Vin Diesel.
Right, right. I thought it was all about family.
Yeah, it was all about family until he decided it was all about money.
Right.
But yeah, I honestly believe that Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift started us down our horrible path of post-credit sequences and surprises at the end of movies that make you go, oh
right,
there's another one.
When comes out before Marvel, doesn't it?
Iron Man was 2010? No,
2008.
2008, yeah.
Yeah. Ah, interesting. They always said that it was the end of Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh, yeah. No, but that's like just talking to the camera.
Yeah.
Like that's a different thing.
No, well, but Kevin Feige's talked about the after credits scene.
Oh, yeah. No. This, I'm talking about
but this is probably
an end of the movie revelation that makes you go, hang on a minute.
Right. Is Ving turns up, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Vin Diesel pops up right at the end and you're like, oh, they're going to make another one.
Yeah. I keep calling him Ving, even though I know he's Vin, but it's because we've got Ving Rhames in this, and I also just don't care about Vin. Other movies that came out that year, Underworld Evolution.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Kate Beckinsale.
Yeah.
She seems like a lovely girl.
She looks like heaps of fun.
Yeah. She's a terrible actor.
And a little Bond film called Casino Royale.
Oh.
So this is interesting because Royale comes out and goes Bourne in vibe to a certain extent.
And it's big, it's action. It's, you know, what is Martin Campbell, who directed it, said he wanted it to feel like a knife fight in a phone box.
Yeah. Wow. I did not know that. That is a great description. It does feel like that.
Like that was his kind of concept. It's such a great film.
Then our next segment, All-Star Guest Stars. We have I'm limiting it to this bunch because there's so many stars.
Oh, it's chockers.
So Ving Rhames.
Yes.
Philip Seymour Hoffman. Michelle Monaghan, who, as we will talk later on, is my secret MVP for this movie. Maggie Q. Jonathan Rhys-Meyers, who I think is really good in this.
Yeah.
I quite like him as the good-looking offsider.
There's a charm that he often doesn't display because he's always playing assholes.
Well, they kind of give him... Yeah, he just gets to kind of be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And young.
Yes. Billy Crudup.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Kerry Russell. Great. Simon Pegg. Great. Like, it's such a...
Everyone's fun.
Lawrence Fishburne. Nailing it. Aaron Paul.
Aaron Paul. Now, I don't know if you could... I mean, he's a celebrity, but he's got like two lines. He was nobody.
But he is someone now.
Well, he is someone now.
And he gets a couple of scenes.
Yeah.
Like he gets an important scene.
He gets an important scene, but also he seems like, you know, you're like, oh, you were really typecast after that.
Oh, man. You
were the useless asshole forever.
Yeah. Tough times. Eddie Marsden, who has appeared in countless movies, and you know you have to mention him because he's in all of Abrams' films. Greg Grunberg.
Oh yeah, he has a scene. Bless him.
Where he gets to just hang shit on Tom Cruise for being boring. Segment cruising around the mission. These are the movies Tom Cruise made before and after. So Mission Impossible 2 was in 2000.
Yes.
So keep that in mind. So 2002, Minority Report.
Amazing film.
2003, The Last Samurai.
Not such a good film.
2004, Collateral.
Really good film.
Yep. 2005, War of the Worlds.
I love that film.
It's great.
Spielberg and Cruise, I feel like they only had a couple of goes at it, but they really nailed it.
They knew what they were doing. War of the Worlds, I'd make two changes.
Yep.
What movie is Tim Robbins in?
He's in a different movie.
Like, it's just tonally, there's something...
It's really weird.
And... I love Spielberg, but when people complain that he's too sentimental, I think he ruins the ending.
Yeah.
Anyway.
You know what's really good is, have you been to Universal Studios and you go past the crashed plane?
Oh, no.
Which is from War of the Worlds, which they use all the time because it's just there.
Right.
Like they built a crashed plane for War of the Worlds and like people use it all the time for other shit.
Right. I went to Universal Studios in 89, so 90. So.
I know me and Will went and we were drinking on the tram car ride and everyone's like, hey, look at these guys. And we're like, we're Australians. This is what we do.
That is so funny. So this comes out in 2006. Then you get 2007, you get Lions for Lambs.
Now, I enjoyed that film, but it's difficult.
Yeah. Then 2008, how's this for a whiplash? Tropic Thunder.
Yes.
And Valkyrie.
Oh, wow.
So he goes from playing a fat movie producer to a Nazi.
Yeah. Also, he played that fat movie producer at the MTV Awards. Like, he came out and did a dance on the stage.
Yes.
Hilarious. Which I think was the rehabilitation of Tom Cruise.
It's the beginning, right?
Yeah.
I think he's the weak link in that movie.
In Tropic Thunder.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he's not in it that much.
I know, but everyone said how great it is, but it was just so...
Also, there's blackface. unapologetic blackface, which I know is meant to be kind of satirical.
But it is a satire.
Yeah, but I feel like it starts to fall away.
I stand right by that. I think it's a work of genius because he has the African-American guy next to him who's calling him out throughout the whole film.
I know. It's the other thing that I find difficult is Ben Stiller doing Sean Penn and I Am Sam. Like, that's...
it's satirizing actors.
I also understand it's very satirical. It's just...
I stand by that.
Sometimes I find some of the comedy in it so broad that I'm like, are you losing the point of your satire here?
Nah, I reckon it's all the way. I back that film 100%. I'm an unabashed fan, and I will go into a knife fight in a phone booth for Tropic Thunder, except for the Tom Cruise bits. About he wins you back with the dancing at the end.
The dancing
and
at the
credits
end is amazing.
and then to round that out, 2010, Night and Day. Did you ever see that?
I did see that, and I really enjoyed it because it was exactly what it promised me. A stupid action film with Tom Cruise and Cameron Diaz.
Yeah, great.
That's all I wanted.
Remember, didn't he turn up somewhere on a motorbike?
Yeah.
he's insane. Anyway.
He's a lunatic.
So let's get to this movie. It opens with Philip Seymour Hoffman's character threatening to murder a woman who we don't quite know who she is yet, but she's quite clearly important to Ethan Hunt, who is played by Michelle Monaghan. And what do you think of this beginning?
It's a strong beginning, but it feels like an episode of a TV show as opposed to a big screen movie.
Right.
It feels like, ooh, you're used to how these movies, like how these TV, this show starts.
Yeah.
We're usurping the paradigm this week. And it's like, no, it's not this week. This is the first time in 6 years, mate.
Yeah.
Like, don't give me a weird opening to a TV show. Like,
yeah.
I find that the most problematic bit, especially because we go through the whole sequence again later.
Yes.
Like, it's giving us, I kind of get what it's there for.
Well, it's definitely showing us that it's not the previous movie.
No, that's true. Because it's very small and in a small space.
Yeah.
And it's not sweeping cameras and slow motion.
Yeah.
And doves.
And pigeons. But, you know, so you brought up, before we got into this, you brought up the criticism that it feels a bit TV.
Yeah, it feels like
a TV show. A friend of ours, Alexi Toliopoulos, had said to me in a conversation that this was his least favorite of the Mission Impossible films, and you said, I think it's because it doesn't feel cinematic, which was an interesting thing to have pointed out because I've only watched it on TV where it feels fine.
Yeah, it feels fine on TV.
Yeah,
but you know, we're putting it into the context of, I haven't seen one of, it's been 6 years since the last film.
Yeah,
I love these films.
Yeah,
I'm really excited, and everything, like even the scenes, which I know that they filmed of him jumping over buildings, like the whole big Shanghai business.
Mm.
Like, none of it feels as spectacular as it should.
Yeah, it feels a bit too close up.
Yeah.
Like he's hedging his bets with his budget, but his budget's great because it's a movie.
It's a Tom Cruise movie.
Yeah.
Like, the budget is like, I know, sure, half of it is Tom Cruise. But he produces these films and he's got money to spare.
Yeah.
So, and as an opening, that feels like... and I kind of get the, you know, when you watch a TV show from the 60s or 70s, like a Mission Impossible, you get those weird like flashes of what's going to happen this week. You know, this week on Mission Impossible, bang, image. And this scene kind of has that sort of feel that, oh, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But, and then it does happen later on, but it's just, But given that the very next scene is at a party, I'm like, well, yeah, we do need something exciting before the movie starts.
Yeah.
Like, I get why it's there. It just feels like an episode of a TV show. Even, like, it's that party as well. Also, it feels like we're watching an episode of Felicity.
It's so funny. So how would you have started it then?
I would have started it with, like, one of those stupid furfies. Like, you know, like a James Bond movie starts with a scene that's absolutely unrelated to anything that happens later on.
Right.
Like Mission Impossible 2 starts with him hanging off a rock for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah.
Like, give us one of those.
Yeah, you could have had him off doing something insane and then his wife calls him and said, did you remember to pick up the ice?
Yeah.
Just on my way, honey.
As
he straps a yacht to his nutsack and uses it to... surf behind.
And also, I get that the other reason they couldn't do that is because he's left that life. He's training now. So,
yeah.
You know, you can't do that, like, in the confines of the story.
Yeah.
Like, I get, you know, the choice that they've made, but it just feels... It feels like it minimizes it somewhat.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And I just would have loved to have seen a big set piece to open the film.
Could you have had a set piece that ends up being...
A training scenario in the end. And it was all a dream.
Or something that is like a... just a supermarket being robbed. And then he just...
Oh, yeah.
And then he takes everyone out without anyone really noticing.
Yeah, kind of things.
And then takes a phone call immediately walking out.
Yeah.
Did you get the ice? You know, and so it shows he's still got his skills.
Yeah, like that would have been a great opening.
And then you go, oh, that's weird. Like, what just happened then? Oh, hang on, he's at a party.
I think the other thing is, like, you know, having seen that scene earlier in the film, like at the very opening of the film, so when it comes up later, we've already seen it and we accept that she's going to get kidnapped at some point.
Yeah.
Whereas if that wasn't there,
yeah,
and you're suddenly... She's been kidnapped. It's like, well, this is a bit convenient. How did they find it? Like, all those questions start to occur to you.
Yeah, for sure.
Whereas because you've introduced it earlier, you just ignore all that.
Well, all of him running around isn't going to amount to anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. It's just the... It's an interesting... I don't think it's a great choice, but I see that they kind of painted themselves into a corner with it.
It's at least a choice.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting. What does work is that you get some Philip Seymour Hoffman early.
Yeah. You know, the other thing, I didn't realize this was the same year as Casino Royale, and they would have known that that was happening. They would have known there's a reboot of Bond. There's a new actor taking on James Bond. And one thing that this franchise has always struggled with is being unfairly compared to, you know, James Bond, given that it started off on TV as like a pastiche of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So they would have been really conscious of, okay, what's something that happens in Bond films all the time? He just has some flirtation with a woman and she sometimes dies.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really mean anything. So let's give Ethan a relationship that means something.
Yeah.
And put her in peril, which is something that won't happen in James Bond.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it does.
Yeah.
But in Casino Royale, but I guess they didn't think...
They didn't know that.
They didn't know it was going to go there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's that was probably a really conscious choice of, let's try and be the anti-Bond. Let's be the monogamous Bond.
Yeah.
Let's be the happy family Bond.
You know, I wonder if you could have just started with the party. The party's kind of fun.
The party's fun, but you know, it's an action spy movie. You want to open with a big bit.
Yeah.
And I don't know that, you know, shooting someone who's tied up is enough of a big bit either. That's a small... Again, like I said, the whole film feels small. And all the big moments are in small rooms.
Yeah.
It all feels very controlled and studio bound.
I do love the party.
Party is great.
J.J. Abrams never... holding back in booking beautiful people to be in parties.
Aaron Paul looks great.
So beautiful. Everyone looks beautiful.
Everyone at that party is having the time of their lives.
I love that everyone likes him but thinks Ethan Hunt's boring.
Mm-hmm.
I also love that he can't help but use his superpowers, like when he lip reads them having the conversation.
And they're like, how did he know what we were saying? which also sets up
which is great. I love the bummer speech by the sister-in-law.
Oh, my God.
She is a bummer.
Yeah.
Fuck, I hate Debbie her so Downer. Much. I really hate her, and you only see her for a few seconds, but it's like, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
Here we go. Fucking bringing up the tragedy of our past while we're trying to have a good time with all these beautiful people. But
stop giving me character development.
Shut up. Who invited my sister? Oh, I guess she's the only one in my family left. This is a disaster. But the highlight of the whole party for me is it has Tom Cruise doing what I love Tom Cruise doing, which is pretending to be normal.
Oh, pretending to be human. Yeah. Just like it's in that first movie when he's pretending to be a workmate. Hey, this is how workmates work, isn't it?
This is great.
Wacky banter. Look at me. I'm a happy guy that lives in a house.
Just him standing there going... great joke. It's like you didn't, you like, you recognize it was a joke.
Yep.
But you do not know.
We know people like that, bless them.
Yeah, some of them are some of the most successful comedians this country's ever produced. Yeah. But
psychopaths, but lovely, lovely, lovely psychopaths.
Lovely. So Ethan is called back into action via a secret camera and is soon off on a rescue mission to save one of his proteges, Lindsay Farris, played by Kerry Russell.
By the way, can we just bring up secret camera? Like, yeah, when was the last time anyone had a wind-on disposable camera so in their good. Life? I think this was the that was the end of that, that technology already.
Yeah. But it and that's I kind of like it. It's almost like is this going steampunk? Like, what is going on here? And they travel to Berlin to save Lindsay, steal two damaged laptops, and make their escape, but not in time before an explosive pellet implanted in Lindsay's head explodes and kills her. Do you reckon we lose Lindsay too early?
Look, no, I think that's carrying on the Mission Impossible film tradition. Yeah. I think number two didn't have enough of that. I think they needed to kill someone famous really early.
Yes.
Because that's one of the things I love about that first movie is that we get rid of Kristen Scott Thomas and Emilio Estevez. Yeah. Like, they're all gone. It's like, oh, this has got Felicity in it. Oh, no, it doesn't.
She's so good too.
She's amazing.
It's.
I think she's so amazing. She's at the expense of another character, but I'll discuss that later.
Okay, yeah. But no, we'll just bring it up now. Is it Maggie Q?
Poor Maggie Q.
She doesn't get much.
She gets nothing.
Yeah, and she's really cool.
She's a great actor, amazing stunt performer, and just gets nothing.
Yeah,
like it's the most underwritten character in this film.
Yeah, it's a bummer, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it's a bummer because once again, Abrams, especially in this era, very good with women characters, very good with cool women who know how to kick ass. And, she just...
Like, the only decent scene she has is driving a Maserati.
Yeah. Yeah. And she looks great.
She's amazing. Like, and yeah, I've seen her in so much... I've seen her be incredible in terrible shows.
Yeah.
She's in that awful movie reboot of Fantasy Island, and she's spectacular.
Right.
Like, I'm like, this is terrible, but I love her.
Yeah, yeah, she's great, yeah. I like that there are technology upgrades, though. It seems like the technology in the film is a little bit more less than we're waiting for, you know, like in the second film.
Oh, man.
It's like all the way through that film, it's like they're trying to log on and, you know.
I can't get a signal.
So I like that.
Only this laptop can connect to the...
Yeah, I've just got to get these sheep to walk quicker to create energy. And Luther feels properly cool again.
Yep.
Like, he seemed a bit like the bumbling sidekick in the second film, but he's properly cool again. Interesting, the flight between the wind turbines, between the two helicopters, once again speaks to what you were saying, which is it's shot tight.
It's so tight. There's so many scenes where you're like... If this was, and maybe this is down to not having the budget for visual effects, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's like if it was a wider shot, and I know that's kind of more of a thing from now.
Yeah.
But a lot of things are big widescreen shots.
Yeah.
Like I remember going to see Jurassic Park at the IMAX because they released a 3D version of it.
Oh, right.
And I was like, I'm going to see this. And I was astounded at how many cropped off heads, like gigantic people's heads. And I'm like, oh, this is the film that Spielberg directed mostly via video link from Prague while he was making Schindler's List.
Yeah.
So he's watched most of it on a small monitor.
Yeah.
It probably looks great on your phone or your TV.
Yeah.
But in the cinema, other than a few big spectacular moments with dinosaurs eating leaves off trees, it's very small and kind of like it's designed for small screens. And I feel like this is still in the aftermath of that. Like John Woo was making a big screen Mission Impossible.
Yes.
Brian De Palma was making a big screen Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
I think J.J. Abrams is trying to make a big screen, but he's only made TV.
Yeah.
Up to this point, I think.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
hasn't thought to pull the camera out a bit.
Yeah.
And let us see the spectacle, because it's not like you can't afford it, mate.
Yeah.
Like, just
get someone to paint in the extra bits at the side. That
yeah. But it would have looked, because it looks like it's such a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's so many of those. Like later on when they have the fight on the bridge, like I'm like, so much of it is close-ups of Tom. I'm like, that could be anywhere.
Yeah. That might be. Just in case anyone wasn't sure that Luther was now cool, I love that he quotes George Bernard Shaw's line of those who can do, those who can't teach. And it's like, oh yeah, he's dropping some truth bombs as well. We meet Fishburne's character, IMF director Theodore Brassel, who is instantly placed as the guy Egan must rebel against. And Crudup, as Ethan's guy,
yep,
is also great because he's very early on, regardless of how it turns out, he's so good at straddling the line of, I don't know about this guy. You know what? He's on my side. Oh, he's just one of those awful conservative types that deep down is a little bit rebellious.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like early on, don't you think?
I mean, it is Billy Crudup and he's always a dickhead.
Always.
Always a dickhead. And also I think around this time, wasn't this around the time that he dumped his pregnant wife for Claire Danes?
Oh, right. Right.
So you just immediately go in with a pre-knowledge of Billy Crudup. He's bad.
It's funny. I
don't like him.
I never remember that, and everyone brings it up with me. Any time I sort of say, oh, Billy Crudup was in it, and he's good. You know he left his pregnant wife. Oh, yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah, okay. No. We get Lindsay's funeral, and we see the bond that she had with Ethan. I have to tell you, is it kind of edgy that Luther asks Ethan if he was banging Lindsay?
Oh, yeah.
Like, that feels just like not something that would happen in latter movies. Like, that's a pretty edgy moment in the film.
Also, it's Tom Cruise. We don't believe he's banging Michelle Monaghan, let alone Lindsay.
We will get to that later. And there is a reason why she's my stealth MVP of this film.
I will say, I reckon, you know, that weird montage of training with Lindsay. Yeah. Like, something from that could have been a better opening than the one we got.
Yeah.
Like, an extended version of them. And it turns out that it's only training.
Yep.
Like, it looks like it's a real, you know, do or die situation. It's like, because they're obviously filmed some of it. Or something for it.
Yeah, maybe it could have been them doing something, and then it finishes with him saying, "You're good to go," and shakes her hand, and then it cuts immediately to her captured.
Yeah. Or, you know what else could have been interesting is, you know, that scene in Silence of the Lambs where they're going in and it looks like it's a really thing.
Yeah.
Something's happening and then all the lights come on and it's just all fake bodies. And it's like, she's just doing training.
Yeah. Yeah, great. Yeah, that would have been good. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know why, but they're just him asking if he was having sex with her while he's trying to talk him out of getting married. And then he's asking, and you know, I had to ask because someone's going to ask. It's like, what were they?
Were they?
He's
been on the internal Slack and he's been in many Slack conversations like, why does she keep getting commendations from him?
He's fucking breaking into everyone's messages.
Oh, yeah, that's
what
right.
He's
he
doing.
Can get into their thing.
He's dirty asshole Luther.
And he's looked at all their text messages and goes, that doesn't seem like they're organizing to hook up, but I'm sure they are.
Oh, yeah. Stickle by name, stickle by nature, Luther. Lindsay mails, we discover that Lindsay mailed a postcard to Ethan with a micro dot under the stamp.
Oh.
What percentage of secret messages have you missed over the years because you haven't checked? I immediately...
Or because I popped the micro dot in my eyeball thinking it was acid.
Oh, yeah. This is great. How can we mash this up? So funny. I love these little moments when they discover stuff like that. But they do this well. Like, I feel like they get to it in a way that is fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because sometimes it can be, we're over here. Has anyone thought this? No. Why would anyone think that?
Like we were talking the other day about the Batman. It's like, why did no one else look under the rug?
Yeah, well,
why did it only take Batman to look under the rug?
Yeah, because Gotham is corrupt.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. But they weren't corrupted. Like, they weren't being paid off by the Riddler.
No.
Not to look under his rug.
Well, maybe they were.
Made them all lazy.
Maybe one of them said, have you checked under the rug? And then one of the cops had a piece on and then offended everybody. And, I don't know.
What are you saying about my hair?
Yeah. Oh, no, don't bring up the rug again. Oh, well, Batman can. He doesn't give a shit. He doesn't know Jeff. He doesn't know Jeff. He'll
poor
be fine.
Poor bald Jeff.
Yeah.
He's embarrassed about it.
Old bald Jeff. You know, that's why he hasn't gotten a promotion. Well, that's what bald Jeff thinks anyway. Doesn't realise that bald Jeff fucking stinks. Shower, mate. Wear some deodorant.
Wash your rug. It stinks. Like that.
Brush your teeth. That's why everyone keeps talking about the rug.
Or do what, you know, sensible people with rugs do and buy four. And yeah. Then you have a haircut and you pop on the short one one day.
Ah, that's a smart move.
Yeah, short one one week. Next one a bit longer. Then after the fourth week, you go back to the first one. Yeah. I've been to the barbers and had a haircut.
Yeah, I do that with a merkin.
I love the idea of your luxurious long.
Yeah,
do you have a man bun down there?
That's week four.
It's a merkin man bun.
I work up towards it.
Anyway. Your merkin mullet.
Yeah. Starts off as a merkin crew cut, then it's a merkin.
Then it looks just like John Travolta.
No, to be honest, it's based on Keanu Reeves in Speed.
Oh my god!
Anyway, but it does actually look more like John Travolta. So we're introduced to IMF technician Benji, as played by Simon Pegg, before he discovers abs. And we also meet Hoffman's villain, Owen Davian, who is heading to Vatican City to obtain a mysterious object known as the Rabbit's Foot, or as Benji refers to it, as the Anti-God.
Yeah.
I wonder if Pegg's ability to make the explanation of what the Anti-God is sound so remotely plausible and fun, that scene alone is why he's in subsequent movies.
Oh, yeah. Because his presence kind of sidelines Luther, realistically.
A little bit,
because they have
yeah.
the same skill set,
yeah.
essentially.
Yeah.
Just that Luther's on the outside, Benji's on the inside.
On the inside, yeah.
Yeah. I think Pegg's great.
He's fantastic.
He's so good. But I will say Hoffman, like, what a great casting choice.
So good.
Like, this is the thing that they've gotten right from Bond in this yep. film is yep. like the villain yep. needs to be a better actor
yep.
than the lead.
Yeah.
It needs to be someone with charisma, someone with menace, someone yep. that you absolutely believe is up to no good.
Yeah.
You know, like...
And it's a good year for it as well because you yeah. get him and you get Mads Mikkelsen
yeah.
in Casino Royale with yeah. his drippy eye.
Oh, his bleeding eye. So good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just... and also someone that can do quiet menace.
Yes.
Like, he's never... Like, he's terrifying, but, you know, it's like Meryl Streep in The Devil Wears Prada. He never really shouts at anyone.
Yes. And deceptively, like, he's a big guy as well.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the obvious MVP.
Yeah. That's just a great, like, it's like, oh, we've got this guy. He's the worst guy in the world. He's an arms dealer who wants to buy the worst weapon ever invented that we haven't really defined.
Yeah.
But he wants it and he's going to do something bad with it.
Yeah. And I believe that person could be Hoffman.
Yeah. You know, Philip Seymour Hoffman? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. He seems like he would do that.
And I believe, the only person who can explain it properly in a fun way is Simon Pegg.
Yeah.
Yep. It's all very good.
Yeah.
Before they head off on their adventure though, Ethan decides to quickly marry Julia at the hospital without giving her any explanation as to who he really is.
No.
She says yes, and is also up for a quickie in some empty room to consummate the marriage. As someone who believes that Tom Cruise would rather photosynthesize than have sex, it's just the moment you realize how brilliant Michelle Monaghan is, because I actually buy that Ethan's into her and does want to have sex with her.
Oh, I totally buy that he's into her.
Yeah.
Like, because she seems fun.
Yes.
Like.
Yeah, and non-judgmental
yeah.
and smart and good at her job.
Yes.
She's got hot friends.
She's, I mean, like, J.J. Abrams is amazing at this kind of character.
Yes.
Like, he's great at casting them. He's great at writing them. Mm. He just, you know, look at the people he's chosen for shows. Like, Kerry Russell in Felicity.
Yeah.
Amazing choice.
Yeah.
Evangeline Lilly in Lost.
Yes.
Incredible choice.
Yeah.
Even,
yeah.
What's her face in Star Wars? Rey.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, she's incredible. Like, just really compelling, beautiful. Like,
yeah.
Which, unfortunately, they all are. They're all breathtakingly stunning.
Yeah.
But they're all brilliantly talented and really like... But yeah, I think...
Daisy Ridley.
Daisy Ridley, that's her name.
Yeah.
But Michelle Monaghan absolutely just is all over this.
Yeah.
Like...
And then that's what I mean about her being the stealth MVP. Yeah. You do feel like the stakes are high because he is actually into her.
Yeah.
And... Philip Seymour Hoffman does seem like he's the type of person that would snuff out a beautiful person like Michelle Monaghan.
Yes, without thinking. For the rabbit's foot. What is it?
We don't know. Why does everyone keep asking?
It's in a canister anyway. That looks bad. It's got some bad symbols on it. It's got symbols of terror.
Yeah, I get it. Now, the all-out action is like when the action kicks into gear. Oh,
finally.
Yeah.
We did have the... We had the Germany scenes, but you know what I found again about that was all of the big action sequences seemed like they were just in a warehouse.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's like, are we in Germany? You just told us we were.
Yeah.
But
now this feels...
Yeah.
We're in Vatican City.
We're in Vatican City. And this feels the most Bond.
Yeah.
Like, this feels like a proper spy movie. We're dressing as priests.
Yeah.
We're hiding in tunnels.
Yeah.
And then it goes full Mission Impossible. We're putting on a mask so we look like Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah.
No explanation of how big the suit is.
It's great. It's I love how the I like watching the mask get made.
Yeah.
Because it's just done in a way where you go, this is all bullshit, but I'm buying it.
Yeah. But now we have 3D printers and we're like, oh yeah, they were kind of on the money.
Yeah, yeah, that's how that works. Happened.
I also love the uploading of the voice print. Like, that's a really, I mean, it's such an old thing. It's like trying to get the car to start when you're trying to get out of something. Like, it's a beautiful fake tension builder.
Yeah.
But it just works so well. The coughing, like, 1 second. What, yeah. Like, and Hoffman just delivers it beautifully.
Well, I don't know how he does it, but it feels like he's Tom Cruise.
Yes. It's a really deft performance because it's like, oh, I'm Tom Cruise now in a Philip Seymour Hoffman suit.
Yeah.
And you believe that.
You do believe it, like from his acting.
Yeah, it's a really great moment.
He also does something in, like, in all of this action and all of these moments, he does something so small that really sums up his character as well. Mm. And it's when he takes... a drink off someone's tray, and he does it with such disdain that the person nearly tips the tray over.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
And it's such a small thing that you just feel like that's his choice. He's decided he's going to do that.
He's a powerful person.
Mate, he's so good.
I honestly would love to see, I haven't watched any behind the scenes of this, but I would love to know if Hoffman got Tom Cruise to play the scene.
Yeah.
As he would.
Yeah.
And then just mimicked him.
Oh, yeah. Because
the physicality is really like the kind of urgent, no, don't come in. I'm just coughing, like.
Yeah, it feels like that jagged,
manic that really Cruise kind thing. Of, yeah. Because Cruise is like a really tightly wound coil.
Yeah.
And Hoffman's kind of loche in this film.
Yeah.
And it's just like a moment of like really, this isn't how this guy has behaved up till now.
No. I know you're not a... PTA fan, but have you seen the outtake of him and Joaquin Phoenix trying to do a scene on The Master, and they're having to light cigarettes, and they've got the bad giggles.
Oh, awesome.
And it's really, but even them getting the giggles is kind of low key, because it's a kind of like a low key intense scene. It's worthwhile watching because they're
fun,
you know, because they're you can hear that people are starting to get a little bit, come on, you got to get this right now. Yeah. And it's like,
it's late in the day.
They're fucked.
And we're delirious.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, because sometimes you film overnight. Like I had one of those where it was like 5 a.m. and every time I opened my mouth, there was just gibberish came out. I'm like, I know the line. It's just, this is what comes out of my mouth now. It's 5:45 in the morning. We've been filming since 6 p.m.
Yeah. This is who I am now.
I am a gibberer.
There's a part of me that, you know, when they leave and they've gotten him, if they'd finished the film, like this kind of gets back to once again what you're talking about, TV.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like it's the end of the episode.
Yeah. And like, and you know, to be continued.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it feels like, yeah, we've got him. It's all sorted out.
Yeah.
And now we're going to go home.
So we do get the scene where Ethan interrogates Davian and doesn't cope with how calm the villain is.
Oh, yeah.
So I reckon... So this is my take.
Mm.
Cruise's acting through the Mission Impossible movies is three notches higher because of this scene where he has to be opposite Hoffman. Yep. I reckon Hoffman elevates him.
Yeah.
And he's really good.
I think Cruise like wants to be an amazing actor.
Yeah.
And he will take a lesson from anyone. Yeah. Just like he'll give anyone a lesson in how to fly a plane and ride a motorbike and do anything crazy.
Yeah.
When it comes to like those small intimate moments, he's like, yeah, I'm ready. Ready to soak up whatever's given to me.
Yeah.
And having someone like Hoffman opposite him, like this scene makes you go, oh man, why? They should have done more movies together.
Yeah. Funnily enough.
Like, I'd love to see them do a small character piece together. Like, you know, like imagine them in like a Rain Man.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Or something where it's just, because like Rain Man Cruise learns so much from working with the other Hoffman.
Yeah.
It's like, I'd love to see, it's sad that we lost Philip Seymour Hoffman. Like he would, That would have been a great film.
Hearing some of the processes is fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
So I was watching this YouTube clip of Nolan interviewing Michael Mann, Robert De Niro and Al Pacino about Heat.
Yes.
And De Niro didn't want to rehearse the diner scene. And so they were just moving in and out, just kind of matching each other. And Mann was just kind of watching it through the camera going, holy shit, this is... a masterclass. But this is also where Pacino reveals that they didn't bother to tell anyone, but he and Michael Mann decided that his character is chipping coke at different points of the day. So that's why when he comes in hot on those two scenes, like there's only two scenes where he is fucking really big, but he is so big. And Michael Mann nearly ruined it because, what's his name? The... very funny Hank Azaria.
Oh, yeah.
So when he's yelling at Hank Azaria, like Hank is scared because he wasn't expecting it.
Yeah.
And Michael Mann is laughing so hard that he nearly shook the camera.
Because he's holding the camera.
Yeah.
Apparently, all of the cast of Frasier, other than Kelsey Grammer, would rehearse that like a theatrical piece to an inch of its life.
Oh, really?
And Kelsey Grammer would turn up and just wing it.
Right.
And they were all such a tight unit that they could just go with it.
Yeah.
Because they all knew where they were meant to be. They knew all their blocking. They knew all their lines. And, you know, he went through some substance abuse issues.
Yeah.
During the middle of, like, it was 11 years.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they could just flow with it. Like, because he's the lead. It's like, yep, whatever he wants to do.
Yeah. We'll make sure that we're good to go.
Yeah. And so it's interesting when you, like, when you say that about, like, he doesn't want to rehearse, he wants to over-rehearse. It's like, I can imagine that situation.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and Pacino was up for it. But, yeah, cool. All right.
Yeah.
Because he's already decided that he's fucking on a coke come down at this point, and this is where he's at. They thought about putting it in the movie, but then they thought it would distract from the character.
Yeah.
So just knowing it. So when you rewatch it, you go,
it's
just
a fun character.
He's fucking high as a kite.
Yeah.
We have the attack on the bridge where Davian is freed and Ethan realizes Julia's life is in danger and he arrives too late. And Davian gives Ethan 48 hours to retrieve the rabbit's foot or he'll murder his new wife. Unfortunately, the IMF arrests Ethan for Davian's loss, but luckily, Musgrave helps Ethan escape to Shanghai to meet up with this team to get the rabbit's foot. A lot happens in this section. What is your What's your favourite moments?
I think probably my favourite moment is the revisiting the lip reading.
Yeah.
With Billy Crudup going blah, 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 blah under his breath. Because you go, oh, it's proper spycraft now.
Yeah.
We're doing a dodgy behind Fishburne's back. And I love that Lawrence Fishburne is, you know, it's Bush era craziness. It's let's get everyone, but also let's be economically rational about it.
Yeah.
We're going to get the bad guys, but we're going to do it cheap.
Yeah.
So I kind of love that part of it. And I think Fishburne's having a ball.
Yeah, Fishburne's great.
He's like, I know I'm pretending to be the bad guy, but I'm not really. And he's just like pushing it to the nth degree.
Yeah.
He's
got such a great voice.
Yeah, so it's good.
He's so good in his little scenes in John Wick. Chapter 4.
Like he opens it with just belting out some scripture.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great.
Just yelling out some Shakespeare.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the bridge scene. I know I already said that. I find it's really frustrating because it looks like it should be a big scene.
Yeah.
And the walls feel too high for some stupid reason.
Right.
At the edge of the bridge.
Right.
Which is probably because it was a controlled environment.
Right.
Whatever it was. But it just like, you know, just pull out a bit.
Yeah.
Like other than occasionally the helicopter flying past the bridge, it's like, this could be anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, and when Tom
looks
jumps,
a bit Avengers, doesn't it?
Yeah. Like when Tom jumps over the hole, it's like, I want to see that hole in context.
Yeah.
I want to see that like with a massive background of like, oh my God, this is miles in the air.
Yeah.
Instead of just looking down through the hole, it's like, well, yeah, that he's jumping over a hole.
Yeah.
Like I want to see him jumping over a hole on that massive bridge at the Florida Keys. Like I want it to be a big kind of, it just didn't feel, Again, it felt very televisual.
Yeah. I do enjoy watching him explode to one side.
Oh, yeah.
That's,
Again, that's become a weird Mission Impossible trope.
Yeah.
Like it happened in the first film and Abrams was gone, oh, yeah, that looked really good.
Yeah.
We'll do that again.
Let's do that again. Watching him hitting the van is iconic. I also like that Ethan disguises himself as Richard Dreyfuss to get out of... to get out of America.
So for that, again, another weird scene for no good reason.
Yeah. Once they get to Shanghai, what's more entertaining for you? The use of baseballs and parachuting to get the MacGuffin or the way Ethan goes A Beautiful Mind on the window with a texter?
Look, I love The Beautiful Mind on the window with a texter.
So do I. I don't know what it is, but there is just something so delightfully lo-fi about it.
It is so good, but it's again it feels, means it falls back into that thing. It's like, well, that could have been a photo of Shanghai.
Yeah.
Like we didn't need to be in Shanghai to see that.
Yeah.
And you know what I find also frustrating? It's like it's an amazing city and it feels like you're in a very different country. Because like even like Hong Kong feels very, you know, British colonial.
Yeah.
Like, even though there's a lot of kind of Chinese stuff there, you kind of go, oh, yeah, they drive on the left and there's a lot of statues of old white men.
Yeah.
It's got a very, you know, it could be Australia, it could be Canada, it could be any of these places that the British went at some point. Whereas Shanghai is like a weird fusion. Like, there's British, there's French, there's Chinese. Like, it's a really gloriously multicultural city.
Yeah.
And you don't really see much of it. Like you see the tops of their giant buildings, which are spectacular. But when they're down at the street level, I kind of wanted it to be a bit more... Like, have you seen Tomorrow Never Dies with Pierce Brosnan and Michelle Yeoh? Like, you really feel like you're in China.
Right.
Like, it's a real... Oh, yeah, we're in China.
Yeah.
This is a Chinese, you know, action sequence for a Bond film. Whereas this feels like Tom Cruise could be in front of a green screen for a lot of it. And I know they're there.
Yeah.
But it just, I don't know whether it's the way it's shot, the whole minimizing feel of it, that it feels like a TV show. But I just never, other than the iconic Shanghai buildings.
Yeah.
I never felt that they were in Shanghai.
Right.
It's a weird,
It's still fun though.
Oh, it's
You know, the use of the baseballs and the
baseball scene, like when
parachuting
he's sliding
down
and popping them all off one at a time. Amazing. Like it's a fun, proper Mission Impossible moment.
Yeah.
But again, I wanted another a bit further pull out. Like, yeah. I want to see, oh, that is Tom Cruise up on top of that building.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I understand.
Instead of
that.
Tom Cruise on a glass slide.
Right, right. Yeah. It's around this time that we discover that Musgrave is a bad guy.
What?
Billy Crudup.
Billy Crudup, who cheated on his wife. Yeah.
And
made off with someone else's girlfriend.
Jesus. Oh, well, maybe they fell in love.
Anyway. Maybe they fell in love.
And we arrive at the start of the film with Davian threatening Ethan and Julia. You discover that that's not really Julia. But you know when she gets popped off. Did you believe it the first time?
At the start of the film?
Like the first time that you saw the movie.
Yeah,
so did I.
Yeah, I think I recently had watched, I'd tried, like, because I love spy things, I'd tried to watch Spooks.
Oh, yeah. Didn't you get into Spooks?
I did eventually, but the first episode I watched, because it was just like on Foxtel, it's like whatever episode's on, someone's girlfriend had her head put in a deep fryer, and I'm like, I am not watching this again.
Her hand, wasn't it?
It was something.
Something,
there was a death.
It's fucking...
It was a death of a girlfriend in a deep fryer, and I was like, I can't.
She's a spy.
Yeah, but
yeah.
Look, it was a girlfriend.
Right. No, she was working. She was on the job. Like, it's not. It wasn't a fridging. It was definitely an agent getting taken out.
But it was just. Yeah. It was just a moment of like, oh no, this is. I can't deal with this. This is too much. Because you know, James Bond always saves the ladies.
Oh man, no. Spooks is
unless fucking... they turn out to be a bad lady.
Yeah.
Then they get dispensed. They're in trouble. But yeah, so it just kind of like upended what I thought was meant to happen in a spy show.
Yeah.
And so this was the same thing. It's like, oh, is that?
Yeah.
That is not what happens in a spy show.
Yeah.
He's just married her. I mean, you know, it's going to give him cause for revenge. But there's not that much of the movie left to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Feels like a late time to murder her.
Yeah.
But
murder her in the first act. Yeah. And then, oh, then we've got two acts of revenge. Great.
Yeah. Best use of a mask, probably.
Yeah.
Like, really good use. Like,
and
it's like,
also, it's a show about masks.
Yeah.
So, we shouldn't be surprised that it wasn't her.
But that's what I mean. Like, in hindsight, it's like, oh, yeah, of course it was someone wearing a mask. But at the time, like, it's not that far removed from what happened to in Mission Impossible 2.
Yeah.
With Rake Cleaver getting... getting murdered.
Also, I mean, how good are those masks? Like,
they're really good.
Tandaway Newton thought she was pashing off with Tom Cruise, and it was really Du Grey Scott.
Yep.
Like,
they're good masks.
I have a feeling that the reason she turned out to be in a mask is so that we could believe that Tom Cruise wouldn't give up the secrets, but also he would have given up the secrets if he knew it was her. Like, on some level, he knew that's not my wife.
Right.
He just, like, he would know.
Right. He was just happy for someone else to be shot.
Yeah. He's right, like, in front of him. I could smell that that's not my wife.
Oh,
I'm not going to give up my secrets.
Yeah. She's wearing the wrong perfume. My wife's allergic to lavender.
Yeah. They never said it in the film, but we know on some level.
On some level. That's like his Al Pacino... cocaine. Character on cocaine theory. Like,
I smell it's not my wife. I will not give up secrets and let whoever that is die.
Yeah. Too bad, so sad for you. You are not main credits.
I'm saving the whole world, mate.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to let some people go. A weird bleed of real-life politics with Musgrave's reason for working with Davian so they could launch a preemptive strike against the terrorist Davian is working for. It's like, that made less sense than the fucking rabbit's foot.
That was very confusing.
We arrive at the finale where Benji on the phone sends Ethan to where Julia is, and then the two of them have a big fight. And what's the... That's essentially what happens.
Yeah.
There's so many things that I love in this finale, starting with Julia suddenly being great with a gun.
Well, no, he just told her.
Oh, well, that's I have here. Ethan must be a good coach.
He trained Felicity to be a very good spy.
Yeah.
So, of course, he can train...
That montage must have been like over the course of an hour.
Yeah,
that
was
that's how good he is.
That's how good he is.
Yeah,
like that, and just point it and shoot.
That's why he was so offended when Luther said, "Are you having sex with her?" It was like, I only knew her for 45 minutes.
Yeah, that wasn't a long session.
Yeah, Jesus Christ, having a crack, mate. What about Ethan fighting with his weird disco moves because he's got a pellet in his head?
Oh, my God. The elbow fighting is seriously one of my favorite things.
It's like, what is it?
Why are you holding your head to, like, elbow people in the head? It was...
Because his head's hurting.
Yeah.
Because he's got a pellet in it. That's about to explode.
But he has to always be hitting people.
The good thing about the pellet in the head causing him pain is that on some level it allows you to believe that Philip Seymour Hoffman could hold his own in a fight against Tom Cruise.
Yes.
Which is great.
Yeah. And also, like, you know, you get some really great scenes. Like, I know we talked about this with John Wick, but it's very Daredevil and Kingpin. It's just like just picking him up and throwing him around. Yeah. So I'm a big guy.
Yeah, yeah.
What some big guys can do.
Yeah. Once again,
he's little Tom Cruise. Woo.
Oh yeah, I can. Like, I'm surprised that Abrams probably said you have to use two hands, Philip. You don't have to pick him up by one. It gives away how tall he really is.
Yeah, it's two hands. Pretend Tom Cruise has got some weight.
I like how Benji essentially plays Ethan like a video game.
Yeah, so cute.
Once again, it's probably that scene and the previous scene of explaining the Andy God that gets him further in. Because
I will say I did enjoy these street scenes. This felt like we were in China. Just running down along those little canals and in and out of those little laneways. I'm like, yeah, we're in Shanghai now.
Yeah.
Like, that's the Shanghai I remember going shopping in.
Yeah, yeah.
Not the one that looks a bit like Vancouver.
No. We get some classic cruise running as well, which was great.
Some spectacular running.
But all in all, and then it ends in a way where it's like, once again, you see Tom walking out as if he's normal.
We haven't talked about the bowl of water defibrillator.
Oh yeah, that's great. That's great. Like,
I love that we go, she's a nurse.
Yeah.
She's gonna be good at this.
Yeah.
But and the breaking of the tongue depressors.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah. Full on.
That is a moment.
Yeah.
Like, that is just like a, did Tom do that? Did he actually bite down on those?
Like, I wouldn't doubt it.
Like, it was amazing.
Yeah.
He
probably defibrillated himself.
Probably. he's bang up for authenticity. Oh, no, I was really dead. Michelle actually revived me in that moment. Yeah. She was so good. She's a great actor.
Yeah, I had my faith in Xenu that everything was going to be okay.
Getting, I love to believe that he thinks he died in that moment.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I passed on, and then they told me I had to come back and save cinnamon. So I did. I came back. So you're welcome, world. You are welcome. How do you feel about Hoffman just getting run over by a car?
Yeah, not great.
That's a bummer, isn't it?
Yeah. It's just like, what? But
yeah.
It kind of felt like the script ran out of steam.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, we could have another big moment, but... Yeah. Although on one level I'm like, well, I'm glad it just stopped.
Yeah.
Instead of having to have, and you know, I feel bad complaining about how small this film feels.
Yeah.
When I'm frequently complaining about it's being too big.
Right.
Like,
right.
Giant CGI fights at the end. Did you think big this, enormous places?
Did you think this before, or was, you know, me mentioning Alexei's thing really pointed out to you?
No, I've always found it a little bit underwhelming,
right?
Especially considering where they go. Like, you know, they're at the Vatican, they're in Shanghai, they go to Germany, and a lot of it you go, I know you've filmed at the Vatican because it's a Tom Cruise movie and it's a Mission Impossible movie, but I really don't see that you're very far from the Universal backlot here.
Yeah.
Like, there's just a... Yeah, no, I've always really enjoyed it as a film, as an action movie, but I just think it's not as spectacular as these films can be.
Well, I feel like I haven't... So, funnily enough, I have not rewatched any Mission Impossible films.
Yeah.
So, I've only ever watched them once.
Yeah.
And I was quite surprised at how much I enjoyed this when I saw it because I was so low on Tom Cruise.
Yes.
So, I think I have a slightly nicer view of it.
I think, you know what it is?
I think all those criticisms are warranted.
I think it's a, like, it's, I don't want to say it's not a tight script, but it's kind of, It's like a fast fashion garment
in
that if you wore it too many times, the sleeves would fall off.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you examine it too much,
it
falls apart at the seams. But it's so entertaining.
Yeah.
Tom is so entertaining.
Yeah.
It just moves at such a great rollicking pace.
Yeah.
And like you say, Michelle Monaghan is really captivating and you're like, I don't want her to get shot.
No, I don't.
And then, you know, you get to the end of the film, you're like, I'm buying her, giving him a defibrillation.
Yeah, I'm buying all of it. And that she's learned how to fire a gun better than any of these assassins.
Yeah.
She's great. Segment who and how, which character do you think you would be and how would you react in their place?
Again, I know this is the third time we've done this and I think I would be Lawrence Fishburne.
Yep.
I don't know why I'm always the really useless admin guy in these films.
Right. I know. You've got a type.
But I think I would know that Billy Crudup had cheated on his pregnant wife with someone.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't trust him.
Yeah.
And so I would believe Ethan over him.
Yeah.
And which would completely diffuse any of the tension.
Oh, yeah. And no. He could still be playing Ethan to get to Crudup.
And to get to Davian. But yeah, I would. Like, I feel like they've painted Fishburne as this, you know, amazing guy, but also an idiot.
And yeah.
You're like, but he's not playing him like an idiot.
No.
But he's behaving like an idiot.
Yeah.
Which is a weird kind of. Yeah.
I think I'd be Kevin hanging shit on Ethan for being boring and not realizing that I'm the boring one. I'd be at that party with all these beautiful women going, you know what? Like, I just don't want to see Ant-Man. Like, I'm just done. Just done with these Marvel movies. Sick of people asking me to watch it. So, segment zero charisma. Kevin, shut up, Kevin. You're the boring one.
Kevin is the boring one.
Poor Maggie Q gets...
I would say Maggie
but it's
Q
not her fault.
And Jonathan Rhys-Meyers. Jonathan Rhys-Meyers at least has a scene or two where he's fun. Like the talking Italian scene with the broken down car is amazing.
Oh, fun.
Like he's having a ball.
Yeah.
And, you know, when they're getting changed under the Vatican, like he's having fun.
Yeah.
But poor Maggie Q gets nothing.
Gets nothing.
Like
yeah.
She gets very short shrift.
Yeah, it's a bummer.
Yeah.
Ruin or improve, so better or worse, ruin or improve the movie with one decision.
Oh, what's your one?
Well, I'd improve the movie by getting John Woo in to film some of the set pieces.
Big set pieces.
Like it's like if you amalgamated the two films, you'd have a perfect Mission Impossible film.
Yeah, I said a similar thing. Give me more widescreen scope.
Yeah.
And, you know, the bridge, too many close-up and quick cuts. You know, it should have had more visible scale.
Yeah.
Like it just, it felt like I was watching, an episode of Alias, to be honest, which I loved.
Yeah.
But I never felt like that was a big screen show.
No.
Like, there were a lot of tricks to make that look like it was a big screen show. And it's like, you don't need those tricks when you've got a big screen.
Yeah. You know what else would have improved the film? Is if we'd seen more of Kevin just hanging shit on Ethan. And then at one point, Ethan says, hey, can you help me with the ice? And then they go into the room and he does like a nerve pinch and knocks him out.
But see, this is the thing. Ethan is decent. He wouldn't do that just because Kevin was annoying.
Yeah, I know.
If then you later it turned out that Kevin was a spy.
Oh, yeah.
And was bad.
Yeah.
Fine.
Or maybe working for Lawrence Fishburne.
You know, do you know what is the most egregious moment in the film, which should have been a signal that this is going to be a small film despite how big it was pretending to be? Is the fact that Ethan, like Tom Cruise, Billy Crudup, are talking about the plan to go and rescue Lindsay in the 7-Eleven.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
They're just having a chat while looking at biscuits and chocolate. And it's like, no, that should have been, you know, this is one of the things I love about John Wick. It's like, even the smallest conversation, it's like, here's a giant backdrop. We're going to just have a chat in front of the Eiffel Tower.
Oh, yeah. Or we're in some room somewhere that has all these paintings.
Yeah. Or like thousands of mirrors. So there's hundreds of us.
Yeah.
And you don't know how they filmed that without the camera crew being in shot.
Well, and you don't understand how that happened. Or even the, where is it that, like, down in that secret subway area, was still, there was still shit in the background that was interesting.
Yeah.
And instead, Now that you bring it up, they film it like it's the two leads from Breaking Bad catching up to talk about where they're going to buy more meth.
Yeah, it's just such a small, ineffectual pop down to the shops.
Yeah,
and I know that was Ethan's cover for finding that out. But once you leave your cover to go and talk spy shit, don't still stay undercover.
Yeah,
like go and do some spy business.
Yeah,
have a high tech meeting over. Like Billy Crudup could have been a hologram in the toilet. Like go into a portaloo and have a chat to a screen.
Yeah.
But just having a talk over the biscuits in the 7-Eleven, it's just like, this is the film we're getting.
Yeah, okay. I feel like you're bumming me out about this film. I really enjoyed the film.
I just wanted it to have more scale.
I do know what you mean.
Because it's a Mission Impossible film.
Yeah.
It's not an episode of Alias.
Well, maybe you're wrong.
I'm fine for Jennifer Garner to go and have a chat with Bradley Cooper over the biscuits.
Yeah.
But I don't want Maggie Q stuck in the biscuit aisle.
Yeah, yeah. Get her out of the biscuit aisle.
Get Maggie Q hanging off the bottom of a helicopter.
Broken biscuits in aisle 7, Maggie Q. Top Gun Maverick emotional scale. I'm going to grade this a 7.5 because of the fact I did think they'd killed Julie the first time I'd seen the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I felt that Tom was doing more acting in this film.
Yeah,
In the last one, certainly. Yeah. The last one he was doing a lot of hair acting.
Yeah, his hair was great.
Whereas this one I felt like he was actually turning up.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that is being surrounded by people like Jonathan Rhys-Meyers and Philip Seymour Hoffman, you know, people who've already proven themselves in other roles. And he's I can step up. I can step up to these people.
Yeah.
Like, these are people I respect.
Yeah.
And I have paid them to be here and I'm going to learn.
Yeah. He's really good.
Yeah.
The Vanilla Sky Sexual Chemistry Award. Monahan's a knockout. And I rate this in the upper tier for Cruise.
Yeah.
In his defense, the leader so far has been the floppy disk in his mouth in the first movie. But I reckon she'd still win, including any other actors.
Even more than the tongue depressors that he snaps with his teeth.
Like,
he's really into those dicks.
Like, I really rate Michelle Monaghan.
She's amazing.
Some squid bits for you.
Mm-hmm.
This was intended to be released in the summer of 2004, but creative differences in the development held it back. David Fincher was the first director in mind, coming off Panic Room in 2002.
Now, that would have been some big action sequences.
Absolutely.
He would have given that some big screen veritas.
Well, check this out. His vision would have seen Ethan and IMF go up against a shady company selling body parts in South Africa.
Ooh.
And there are suggestions it would have been rated R.
I love David Fincher.
Fincher is
like, bring
insane.
Him onto a franchise is like, yeah, you know all the things you like about that? I don't want those in there.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope he goes and makes that movie. Just make that movie.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be Mission Impossible. It can be, you know, Impossible Mission.
Have you ever watched The Work Print? Like, it's technically a director's cut, but The Work Print of Alien 3?
No, I've never gotten around to it.
It's really good.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's much more atmospheric than the one they released.
Right.
And the alien hatching sequence is gruesome.
Right.
And amazing.
Right.
Like, it comes out of a cow carcass.
Cow. Yeah.
Like, hanging in a...
Yeah.
It's like, it's... It's, you know, it was the film he made before 7, but it's like, oh yeah, this aesthetic.
Yeah. It's, I've got it somewhere actually.
It's really good.
I've always thought about getting around to it.
It's, yeah, I really like, there's a lot more Paul McGann in it.
Oh, great.
And there's a lot more acting, like people acting against, like, you know how the film that came out was like, there's an alien, it's bad, let's stop it.
Yeah.
But there's people kind of acting for the alien.
Right.
Because it's like, which is a thing that happens in all alien movies, but that kind of got excised from this one.
Right, right.
In the final version. But it's like there's a, and not deliberately, because they're crazy.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Wasn't that the movie where the planet was meant to be made out of wood? That was one of the
first drafts.
Yeah. Next up was director Joe Carnahan, who Cruise was an executive producer on his cop film Narc. And Carnahan cast Kenneth Branagh as a villainous domestic terrorist, Carrie Ann Moss as the love interest, and Scarlett Johansson as Ethan's IMF protege.
Wow.
That's a good cast.
That is a great cast.
Unfortunately, Carnahan was also angling for an R rating and the studio was not into this.
No.
Cruz met Abrams while he was working on War of the Worlds and then binged Abrams' series, Alias. He offered him the movie to make his directorial debut, even though he was busy on Lost, Abrams accepted the job. This pushed the movie back to accommodate Abrams, and because of this, we lost Brenner and Moss and Johansson.
But we got Morpheus from The Matrix.
But so, we got Morpheus. You know. So, you know, one Matrix in, one Matrix out.
Also, our first taste of Kerry Russell playing a spy, which she did beautifully on The Americans for a number of years.
Yeah, right. I've never watched The Americans.
Oh, it's great. Matthew Reese is so good.
Because I've been watching Perry Mason, so his mum, she sent me an interview of the two of them on, I think, Letterman or something like that.
Oh, because they're both in Cocaine Bear.
This is an old one. Yeah. And it was great. Like, the two of them together are pretty funny.
They're really funny.
Yeah.
Because Margot Martindale's also in The Americans. And, I saw an interview with the three of them and talking about Cocaine Bear because they're all in it.
Yeah.
And they're like, we're a package deal now. Like, you have to hire all of us.
he's really dry. He's got these, he reminds me of, I know they're both Welsh, and that's probably why, but what's his name that works with David Tennant?
Russell T. Davis?
No, the Welsh actor. The Welsh actor. I'm drawing a blank on his name. Someone's listening.
Oh, Michael Sheen.
Michael Sheen.
Yeah.
Who also can be quite dry.
You know, if you want to see two attractive men talking bollocks for hours, you know everyone loves The Trip, which is Rob Brydon and Steve Coogan. Matthew Good and Matthew Reese have made a series where they just drink wine.
Wine, yeah. 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 So he was on a podcast recently that I was listening to, and his mum told him it's the best thing he's ever made. And he was, and then when he couldn't go back for season two because of
COVID.
Because of Perry Mason.
Oh, right.
She was devastated. It's like, I'm making Perry Mason. Oh, no, it was when he was making, No. The Spielberg movie with The Post.
Oh.
So he's like, I'm in a movie with Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep.
But the Steven Spielberg movie. The wine show.
It's the best thing you've ever made.
Love him.
That's so funny. So Abrams, when he came on board, brought in Roberto Orci and Alex Kurtzman to write a new draft that focused more on the IMF team dynamic.
Yeah. Kurtzman and Orci are two of my, like, they've written some of...
Is it Orci or Orci?
I would say Orci, but it's probably...
Orci, yep.
But that's just me. It could be wrong. But yeah, they are... They're like the MVPs of the Abrams world. Like they show ran Fringe, which is one of my favorite shows of all time.
Yeah.
Like, just incredible. And Alex Kurtzman now is like the overall boss of Star Trek.
Star Trek, yep.
Like, he's calling all the shots there and making some great, you know, TV. But yeah. Although he did make that terrible Mummy film with Tom Cruise.
You know, you don't get all of them right.
Yeah, they can't all be gems.
Yep. Thandoway Newton was offered the chance to reprise her role, but she declined, citing she wanted to focus on her family. But I reckon, in hindsight, that was because she was like, fuck that.
Or she'd seen the script. She was offered the Maggie Q role, and she's gone, what, I drive a car? That's the whole extent of my... Yeah, or did they want to bring her in for the Michelle Monaghan?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
That would have been more fun. Like, she would have been great at that.
Yep.
I would have believed her in that.
Yeah, would have given her more to do. Ricky Gervais was cast as Benji, but had to pull out due to production delays that led to scheduling conflicts with the film For Your Consideration, the Christopher Guest / Eugene Levy film. It's interesting to think about.
Yeah.
Peg's better.
Peg's so much better. And also, I can say I did a gig once with someone who's in this film.
Yeah, it's great.
It's my sixth ever gig.
Yep.
I was on the bill at Le Joke at The Last Laugh upstairs, and he was headlining.
Great.
I know.
So you should be in the next Mission Impossible.
I probably should. That's how that works.
So this movie hit the cinemas after Cruz had a nervous breakdown, jumping up and down on Oprah's couch during her talk show.
Oh.
And this was also after the Balls of Steel team squirted Cruz with water during an interview.
Oh, dear.
And this was also around the time that the South Park episode Trapped in the Closet aired. Yeah. And there were rumors that Cruz insisted Viacom, which owned both Paramount and Comedy Central, to pull repeats or he wouldn't promote the new movie.
Ooh.
So while none of this hurt the opening weekend, this film is the lowest grossing installment of the series.
And look, I also imagine people came out of the cinema and went, yeah, it's fine. Like, no, there's nothing in it that you go, oh, you've got to see it because of this.
Yes. Like, even though I enjoyed it, it's, you know, I had a pretty low bar for how I felt about Cruz at the time. And I still am not necessarily a fan, but I can ignore him in the movie that I'm enjoying. Like, he's this beautiful blank spot on the screen. A couple of more things that made me laugh. While in Rome, to distract inquisitive crowds from watching them film the movie, they set up a phony second unit close by and then hired girls in bikinis and older women dressed as nuns to pretend they were filming parts of the movie.
Oh, wow.
This allowed them to film relatively undisturbed. I want someone to make a movie about that fake movie being made. Yes,
the Nuns in Bikinis movie. What is that?
Yep. Nuns...
I mean, they're in Italy. Like, if you want to distract people, nuns and girls in bikinis is the way to go about it.
Oh, it's so smart. Like, it's really smart. You can make that widescreen.
They probably did.
Yeah.
They probably had the bloody second
director. Yeah. You look at that. It's going, like, geez, that looks magnificent.
So, yeah, I really do enjoy this film. It's fun.
Yeah.
I don't want anyone to think I hate it because I know I've been railing against certain aspects of it.
Oh, yeah. No, but I think they're fair criticism, so. The final thing for you, to promote the film, Paramount rigged 4,500 randomly selected Los Angeles Times vending boxes with digital audio players, which would play the theme song when the door was open.
Oh, wow.
The audio players didn't always stay concealed, in many cases coming loose, dropping onto the newspapers, and often mistaken for bombs. Police... bomb squads detonated a number of the vending boxes. They even temporarily shut down a veterans hospital in response to one of these, and I say this inverted commas, threats. Isn't that great?
That is some publicity gone wrong.
I love
old school PR. It just doesn't happen anymore.
Ah, yeah.
Nowadays it's just like, oh yeah, just come to the movie. We'll do some green screen in the corner. You can stand in front of the...
Well, they don't even really promote too far out anymore because of people's attention spans. It's all about, you know...
the opening weekend.
Yeah.
And it's... yeah. I feel like we've... and also because they're fighting for space with streaming.
Yeah.
About launch dates and things.
Also, streaming's dying.
Yes.
Streaming's dying big time.
I mean, it always... basically, what's wrong is, like, streaming for a long time was... measured on new subscribers.
Yeah.
And then one day someone went, is it profitable? And they were like, oh, actually, no. Yeah. And so now streaming is being, it's like, is it profitable? And it's like, well, yeah, no. So stop spending money on it.
Yeah. That's why we're going to get a lot less Marvel and Star Wars series. And that's why that Indiana Jones series got cancelled as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, look. It's sometimes hard to drag out a franchise in which there's nothing new to say.
Yeah.
Like Willow.
Oh, yeah.
Like...
I feel like...
the film was fine. Why do we need another one?
Yeah. I feel like Star Wars, like, jump ahead 1,000 years.
Yeah.
And have all the characters that we know be, you know, talked about the way Jesus was talked about.
Yeah.
You know?
That would be cool. That would
be great. And people then we'd know
when... obsessed with, you know, the Skywalkers as if they were mythology.
Yeah, and people getting things wrong.
Yeah.
You know, the
go and pitch that now.
Who wants to fucking deal with the Star Wars fandom?
Yeah, that's true.
Who wants to deal with any of the fandom? All of it's become...
yeah, it's...
like, toxic. For a while there, it was hilarious that it was like, look at DC. Look at their toxic fandom. And it's like, no, it's...
that's everyone.
It's now everyone.
Yeah. That was just the Snyder Bros. That's a different story.
Oh, man. It's
who are still going.
Still going.
Yeah. They're, like, convinced that they... oh, we changed one thing once. We can change everything.
Well, he keeps feeding it as well.
Yeah, I know. He loves it.
And he's got his new, his version of Star Wars coming out. Oh, Rebel really? Moon.
Oh, yeah, on the Netflix.
Yeah.
Did you watch his zombie movie on the Netflix?
Yeah.
It was not very good.
I was fascinated because heaps of people raved about it to me.
Yeah, I don't know who those people were.
Like, there were so many shots where they were quite clearly the actors weren't anywhere near the other actors.
No. Well, I mean, Tig Notaro replaced someone entirely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which you're like, how does that happen? I was like, that's right. These films are made in, they're like a collage.
Yeah.
No one's actually in the same room with each other. Also, there were like weird robotic zombies that were never explained.
Yeah. Strange film.
Yeah.
Anyway, isn't that going to become a whole series? Yeah,
I think it's meant to be like a whole thing, but...
Anyway, I was happy with The Last of Us. And everyone who's played the game, stop telling me that it doesn't live up to the game. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, exactly.
I really don't give a shit.
It's a completely different thing.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't need to be better or worse.
Yeah.
It's its own thing.
Yeah.
I played the game. I enjoyed it. But I played the game like in... When did it come out? Like 2012 or something?
Yeah.
Like, I don't remember it.
Yeah.
I can remember some scenes that were really kind of seared into my mind. But, yeah. But Gary's played it like... He just played it again for like the 12th time or something. And so when he was watching the show, he goes, oh, that doesn't happen like that. And I'm like, I don't remember any of this.
It's also, guess what doesn't happen in the episode? Joel gets shot and then you restart at the saving point.
Oh, yeah. Like,
it's a TV series.
Yeah. People get killed all the time.
Our final segment, sum it up. So for you, the movie is good but too small.
Look, I'd give it maybe a 3.5.
Yeah.
It's enjoyable.
Yeah.
The performances are great.
Yeah.
Apart from poor Maggie Q, who's got nothing to do but wear a dress.
Yeah, it's not her
fault. And it's, you know, there are some cute attempts at action sequences, but none of the set pieces feel like they're big enough. Like, it's a Mission Impossible movie. I want, you know... Like, look at the opening of Casino Royale.
Yeah.
He chases a guy down the arm of a crane.
Yeah.
And there's parkour all over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
And
it's so good.
It runs through a wall.
Yeah.
The most Ethan does is do a little pendulum.
Well, even in Casino Royale, when they end up in a warehouse, he's getting hit so hard in the knackers that you don't think about whether that's a soundstage or not, because you're too busy thinking, that looks really sore.
Yeah. I mean, and that's in the book. It's a carpet beater in the book, not a knot.
Right.
but still, it's like, you're like, oh, wow, you went there.
Man, it's going to mash cock at the end of it. Yeah. Anyway.
Why do women keep sleeping with him?
It's maybe that's what it is. It's like, Jesus.
I want to see how mashed it is.
Yeah. Get your mash knob out.
I heard you got mashed in the knob.
Yeah. I feel like Hoffman, Crudup and Monaghan really elevate this. Well, you know what? I'm like you. I'm giving this Tom Cruise's 3.5 jaw flexes out of 5.
Awesome. We're on the same page.
And then we we are heading into where it becomes big, like really big.
Really big. We're about to go huge.
Yeah.
It's almost like... Maybe this film, look, I don't know what the budget was like, but maybe this film was made in this efficient way that Abrams has.
Yeah.
So that it could prove it still has legs. It would have made a massive profit.
Yeah.
Because they've not really spent as much money as they normally, you know. I'm sure they didn't spend anywhere near as much money as they did on the Sydney one because that looks expensive.
Yeah.
This looks kind of cheap.
Yeah.
But maybe it made enough, it's the lowest grossing, but maybe it made enough money that they went, well, we can do another one.
Yeah, well, that's it, isn't it? It doesn't have to be the amount of money it makes. It has to be what the profit's like.
Yeah.
Did you know that John Wick was like 3 weeks away from being released online?
Really?
The first one? Yeah.
Wow.
They had no belief in it whatsoever.
Yeah.
And then 3 weeks out, Lionsgate went, no, you know what? We're going to release this. We're going to buy and release it in the cinema.
Yeah.
And now the Chapter 4 is the biggest earner out of the John Wick series.
It's huge.
Anyway, that probably says a lot about Mission Impossible 3 when we spend a lot of time talking about John Wick 4.
Exactly. Like if it had a look like John Wick.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Adam.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to Adam again for joining me on this podcast. We are loving doing this. We've already recorded the next one and it's just great. What a good time. Thank you also to Susie for being our Patreon supporter of the episode. Don't forget to head to patreon.com/Justin Hamilton if you'd like to gain access to bonus podcasts and more. And a quick reminder about my show with Tim Ferguson on June 13th at the Harold Park Hotel. Head to bigsquidpod.com, click on gigs, and you will find all the details you need there. If you'd like to support this podcast, but money is super tight, and don't get me wrong, I get it. I totally get it. But sometimes people want to help out. A top review on Apple Podcasts will help people find the work that my friends and I are doing here. And that's just as good as anything. So I hope you're well. I'll be back soon. We have a Space Podyssey coming up with Ben Elwood. We're covering the movie Her. And there's a few more goodies in the works. So I'm looking forward to having your company again soon. Until then.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.